Some of the world's greatest stories are told through song. We tell the stories about those who give us these songs. Not all the songs are great, but god damn do these guys make it interesting. You are now listening to Voluble Radio Podcast.
Hey everybody, what's up? Welcome to Voluble Radio Podcast. I'm your host Mike. Co-hosting with me is Ryan.
What's up?
And on the Googles and fact checking is Rich. And we got Limp Bizkit aficionado James with us tonight. What's happening, dude?
All right.
And yeah, if you don't know the show, we basically just kind of do a review on bands. We get into some history, some timeline. Yeah, today's episode is Limp Bizkit. So, Ryan, I know you're a big Limp Bizkit guy.
Yeah, of course.
Of course.
Of course I am, ironically. No. I was when I was 12. Uh-huh. And then I stopped giving a fuck when I was about, I don't know, 13 or 14.
So the first time you heard Limp Bizkit, you were like, what, 12 years old?
97. It was right after $3 bill, so probably 12.
And, like, what would you say, like, your initial feeling towards Limp Bizkit would be?
It was awesome.
Yeah?
It was hateful.
Oh, okay.
It was raw.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the name. You're like, Limp Bizkit's a gross name.
It is.
You hear the music and, like, it's just like a disgusting sound.
That's interesting that you say that, because the name is like probably the precedes the band.
Right.
Yeah.
Because of, oh, Limp Bizkit. I heard they jerked off onto a biscuit.
Yeah.
Before I even heard one song, I already knew they jerked onto a biscuit.
I was in when I heard it.
But like that was like part of their image. Like I feel like they wanted to just be like this ugly sounding.
Yeah,
right.
They changed that quick, which
they had the whole thing. Like Fred would come out and like flip the crowd off.
They came out of the toilet in '98.
Toilet rock.
It was toilet rock for sure. And Ozfest.
Mm-hmm.
And
he's flushing like cutouts of Christina Aguilera down the toilet.
Yeah, not yet. It was like Hanson maybe at the time.
Oh,
and
gotcha.
Spice Girls. And I was listening to a CD.
Such easy targets, by the way.
I was listening to a live CD. It's, like, really hard to listen to because he's like, these fucking sluts need to get fucked by every guy here, those fucking disgusting pig whores.
Ooh,
and you're like,
God.
Jesus Christ. The Spice Girls, A, aren't even known for, like, being whorish or slutty.
Right.
Like, they weren't known as that.
Yeah, they were, like, empowering.
They were like, they were kind of, like, looked hot and dressed, but they weren't, like, known as being that. And just the way he was saying it, I'm like, Jesus Christ, the hate this guy has for no reason of these.
I feel like when Limp Bizkit came out too, like everything that was on the radio was like them attacking like Spice Girls and Hanson, right?
Yeah, that was probably the two.
Like, I mean, that was dominating all music videos and shit like that. So it was kind of like their way of finding like the kids that are like, I hate this music. Like, oh, well, you might like Limp Bizkit. Come over here, you know? I never was a fan of these guys, man. I don't know. Like, never really got – like, James, were you into them? Like,
I really don't remember if I started with Faith or if I started, like, way later. Because I remember Significant Other was huge.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Blowing up. And I must have doubled back and listened to Faith. Look, my thing with music in general is I always kind of lean more toward the pop side of things. I'm not really a big metal person.
Like, who do you listen to usually then?
In that era, I was listening to like both boy bands, NSYNC and Backstreet Boys. I was listening to Kid Rock. I was listening to Britney Spears. Whatever was on
pop. Honestly, anything
whatever
that's on the radio.
Was on, whatever was on the pop station's top 40 on the radio, 100%. So I think that they were kind of carving into this, into the top 40 tracks, I guess. They were carving their way in.
Limp Bizkit was.
I would say that rap in general was there. They started making their mark, and that's kind of where Limp Bizkit took off by the time Chocolate Starfish came out, I was a Limp Bizkit freaking fan, like a huge fan.
Huh.
But definitely did not start with $3 bill for me. Definitely not. I had to double back. So I was listening to that after after 01, after Chocolate.
Mm. And you never liked it? You were always like, this is too...
Faith, I liked Faith. I thought it was cool, but that's because, again, that was their poppy track on that CD.
When that came out, I was like, that's a cool cover. Like, I know this song from my mom listening to it or something. Yeah, yeah. They made it sound cool. And
that was
rock.
The downfall for me was when Faith was a single.
Really?
That's when I started to be like, no.
Oh, well then, now I feel like the uncool.
No, yeah, I'm the total hipster here at Limp Bizkit, so I'm going to be judging.
I can totally see that. I mean, they were, you know, I was thinking about it, and I really believe that Limp Bizkit kind of, not coined the term, but like they were really associated with being sellouts before I even really heard about being a sellout.
That's absolutely
one of the first bands, if not the first band that I ever heard of, somebody being like, they sold out. And I remember having no idea what the hell they were talking about. And all the original Limp Bizkit fans, like Ryan, they were grunge or metal fans.
Right.
And then these guys are rap, literally raps. Like every track is a rap. And I could totally see people being pissed.
Very weird for it to be pop. Like, I didn't understand. I thought $3 Bill was more like pop, like accessible. Just he wasn't doing like those baby voices. That is what, like, so what you gonna do now? Just like, I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh, like DJ Mrah, like that shit. Like,
just
ugh.
When he talks like this, I think that
is what made it commercial.
That's the craziest part to me. Is that was what was like. People were like
his video. I mean, hey, at that point in time, music videos were like blowing up. TRL was blowing up.
$1 million videos.
When the M and MTV stood for music, still, you know,
they were so Limp Bizkit. I don't know if it's right place, right time, or right sellout, right time.
I was thinking that too. Yeah.
They got on that. They were making their videos. I mean,
and you know, everything kind of went downhill once they stopped. Was that like? The music industry being like, all right, this is too ridiculous. And then, because like nothing, MTV, like music videos stopped and everything, like right around the
time. I think it was Napster and all that stuff. Because even Napster, like what, promoted one of their tours?
Fred Durst got shit because he was openly for Napster.
Because now the internet is like killed the, like you don't watch music videos at this point. You're like, I could go on fucking, you know, any torrent or whatever and find what I want.
It's very interesting.
And I just love how Fred, all the artists out there, like Metallica, Eminem, they're like, hey man, this is our art, you can't just steal it. And of course Fred Durst comes out and he's just like, no, this is so cool, keep doing it guys. Yeah,
I think that it was on the, they were on the cusp of pop and rock, so they had fans that were going to Family Values tours that were not interested in listening to rap, and then they had fans that were only interested in listening to rap and they weren't interested in rock. And I mean, I don't know anything about like the music, but obviously a lot of people really respect Wes.
Yeah, oh yeah.
And so you had this guy that was crushing it on guitar, but then you're turning the group into a rap group. So I feel like they might have lost their identity.
Yeah. Maybe, I mean, they had the greatest guitarist. I still feel he's one of my favorite like guitarists ever. And they're, just using him in the wrong way.
His ridiculous makeup and stuff another contributing factor to their like allure.
Yeah,
I feel like a lot of people wanted to check them out because they wanted to see what kind of nonsense this guy
is. Yeah. If you don't know Limp Bizkit by now, even with us talking, like they were nominated for 3 Grammys, they sold 40 million records worldwide. Like, holy shit, that's a lot of records.
Yeah.
God damn. They won 1 American Music Award. And speaking to MTV that James was just saying, they were the first band to be inducted into the TRL Hall of Fame.
Ooh.
First band ever in the TRL. Yeah, right?
That means something nowadays.
And I think that speaks to what you were saying, too, that they were like this pop band, and that kind of like them and MTV were almost like married in a sense. Like, and I guess the story really starts with Fred.
Him and who? I think him and, I want to say, Rivers started it?
Sam, yeah.
Sam being the bass player, right?
Yeah, Sam Rivers, and then his cousins, John Otto, the drummer.
But yeah, Fred was born 1970 in Jacksonville, Florida. Apparently his father left him when he was just a baby.
Even then he knew.
He took one look at his bleach blonde hair and his earrings.
So when you're gonna change me? And he's like, no, I'm out of here.
He was like, a baby with a soul patch? I can't do this anymore. I'm out.
His mother remarried, and they moved the family from Florida to North Carolina. I saw in the documentary about, or the VH1 Driven, is that it?
Yeah.
He was like a big Kiss fan?
Oh, yeah.
And I just thought that was really interesting. They showed pictures of him dressed as like Ace Frehley. I was like, oh, right, Ace is the best one, you know? And I kind of think that was a lot of his inspiration, how like Kiss was like this, I don't know, like marketing machine.
Yeah.
And he kind of was inspired more about the business maybe side of it too. At least that's the impression I got from like doing the research.
Yeah, I can see that for sure.
And I guess he has a half-brother, too. Is that right?
Oh, I don't know about... I didn't know.
Yeah, I didn't catch the dude's name. He looks just like Fred, but with, like, long hair. He's kind of more... Every time they, like, cut to his half-brother in this documentary, it's just like, yeah, then Fred was in jail, and we, like, threw this killer party because Mom was gone. Like... But from a very early age, Fred started getting into hip-hop. Apparently, he was, like, a talented artist. Like, he was a painter.
Mm.
And he was really good at doing graffiti, and he was like a breakdancer. I guess he was in a breakdancing club.
Oh, the Reckless Crew?
The Reckless Crew, yeah. And like what? They were like winning competitions and shit, right?
Who was giving out these medals and stuff? What competitions are having, like, were they official competitions?
It is North Carolina. Yeah. They're like...
They did it in a parking lot, and someone's mom was like, you guys were the best. Threw some change at them.
Yeah, I just picture, oh my God, Fred spinning on his head in the parking lot.
That's why he had to wear the hat, because he had the big bald spot from spinning so much.
So, from early on, he's really, really into, like, the hip-hop scene, if he's, you know, breakdancing and graffitiing. And then he starts getting into DJing, and it's really funny that he starts DJing, and then he's also rapping, too, but he has this, like, flock of seagulls to do the whole time.
Oh, yeah. Is that what he's wearing?
He just looks like really like it seems to me like early on he wanted a lot of attention. Like he wanted people to notice him, right?
Yeah.
And he wanted to like make a big spectacle of himself, so to speak. He was also a skateboarder. He was into Black Flag, other punk bands. And a big thing that helped shape him kind of was his stepdad, I saw, was like this military-esque cop.
Big Bill,
yeah. It just seems like they never got along. Is that right? Like, do you...
That's what I got from it.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought it was interesting when he went to go meet his real dad,
because
he ran out of money and he was like 18 and he wanted money, so he met up with his real dad. And I don't know exactly what happened, but he came back and he was like, "Fuck that guy."
Yeah, pretty much. That's what I saw.
He was like, "Oh, you went to go get some money from him," and he was like, "No, thanks." I want to know now what their relationship is. If he talks to him or if he...
Oh, my God. I don't know, actually. Yeah. And
why would he not ever write songs about that, really? Like,
I picture
he's always writing about women and, like, his heartbreak with, like, girls and stuff. And, like, oh, you stupid bitch, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And like that. But not about your dad leaving you? That'd be a better thing for a song.
I picture Fred Durst's real dad looking like the dad from Joe Dirt.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
But instead of a mullet,
Ricky Bobby's dad, maybe.
Ricky Bobby. But instead of, like, the mullet that he has, he's got, like, a backwards red Yankee cap on. So in 88, I see that Fred, what's it called? He graduates from Hunter Huss High, which I'm like, he graduates from Triple H.
Wait, where was it?
Hunter Huss High School in North Carolina.
Oh.
I think it's Gastonia.
And then he wound up in Jacksonville?
Well, yeah, so he's born in Jacksonville.
Oh. Raising eyebrows.
Pop Dukes leaves. They move up to North Carolina. Okay. She finds somebody new. I think they were living like in the attic of a church at one point.
Yeah.
They were,
I think,
like,
that was before Big Bill came along.
Yeah, they were not doing well at all, like when it was just the two of them. But yeah, so he graduates from high school. He goes to Gaston College briefly, at which time he's working in like skateboard shops. I think he's working at Pizza Hut at the time.
He's Eminem, but with a good relationship with his mom.
Yeah.
Kind of, yeah.
I would say so. Poor man's Eminem. All right.
That's exactly how he was described 20 years ago, and that's how he's described today.
I think Eminem would agree with you, actually, yeah. He gets out of college, like you said before, he goes down to Jacksonville and finds out his dad's a dick. So he's like, I'm going to go join the Navy now. I'm like, okay, like, I can't see, I see Fred Durst in the Navy like I see Pauly Shore in the Army, you know, like, it's just, I don't know, dude.
Yeah, I mean, the Navy, isn't that known as the gay one?
Yeah.
Nope. There you go.
I think in the documentary, when they get into him going to the Navy, they actually play In the Navy by YMCA.
Yeah, there you go.
So he goes to the Navy, he's stationed in Oakland, California. He didn't like the Navy, obviously, and you would call his mom all the time, I guess, and just be like, "Take me, get me out of here."
Oh my God. Should have wrote raps about that. Yeah. Call my mom from boat.
Mom, call my mom from the missile cruiser. So his mom is like, "No, Fred, you have to suck it up. You joined the Navy." So then he meets this chick, Rachel Turgesson.
Turducken,
I guess. in the Navy, and then he takes her home to Mama down in North Carolina, and they get married on the back porch.
Of course they did.
Of course they did.
Like the trash they are.
I wonder if he had a... Because you can't grow facial hair. You can only have a mustache in the Navy. So I wonder if he had a mustache or if he kept it clean. But I can't envision Fred Durst without a soul patch and like that little stuff on the side.
So 1990, he ends up having his first kid, Adriana Durst. Is that right? And then Fred gets discharged out of the Navy for being rebellious. And I'm like, I didn't realize it was that easy. You just
are we trying to look up pictures of her?
No.
Yeah, I think it's Adriana. So he gets discharged. And then him and his wife, Rachel, get in a fight. And then Fred gets he gets arrested.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, he jumped out the window trying to leave the scene.
Yeah, I don't know what the hell that was all about. I don't know if he, like... he didn't, like, beat the girl up or something, I don't think.
He's probably just screaming.
Yeah, he's like, "Shut the fuck up!" He's just making all the sound effects with his mouth. He's going...
That's when the cops caught him.
So then Mom flies out, bails him out for $5,000, at which point half-brother is having, like, a wicked sweet party back at my parents' pad, dude.
That's a movie in itself, his brother getting the party ready.
Did you guys see the footage of like them jumping off the roof into the pool or something down there in Florida?
No.
I saw that, at the mom's house. She's like, "Don't do it." Yeah, she's like yelling
Fred
at
Durst.
Him.
Wait, who? Oh, Fred Durst is jumping?
I think it was Fred
Durst.
Is that
Durst. True Life? Yeah, I think it was like an MTV True Life. I didn't
see
that.
They're always horsing around, those Durst boys.
When them Durst boys going to get into
them thirsty Durstys?
Oh, that's his daughter. She's pretty hot, actually.
Yeah.
Not bad.
Wait, no, that's his girlfriend.
Oh, that's his girlfriend?
And his daughter.
He is from Jacksonville.
He's from Jackson.
A redneck fucker from Jacksonville.
So Mom bails him out for $5,000. They fly back. And then Fred starts a rap group with the local DJ, DJ Ready Rock.
This is the video now.
Yeah.
When he's wearing the turtleneck.
So wait, before we get into just so what they do with this rap group is they go around to all the fucking radio stations and they just start harassing people and like play our music. And some guy just goes, "Okay."
Like, yeah, some guy's like, "Okay, here's the list of all the people looking for artists."
When I researched this, I was like, "This is just an example that you don't have to have talent. You don't have to fuck it. You just have to be, like, persistent." Mm-hmm. That's it. You just keep knocking on doors. Like, you know what Fred Durst should be doing right now is, like, TED Talks and shit like that. He should be, like, a motivational speaker.
Yeah.
He's like, just get out there and just put yourself out there.
He's got that video where I think he's one that he directed. He's, like, a speaker, and it's, like, a church.
Oh, yeah.
I never saw that.
We were trying to watch it the one time, it lost us, yeah.
Really?
Yeah. It seemed like it could have been interesting, but...
It was like he was trying to make a short film with the band.
Yeah,
okay,
like Wes is in it playing a character, and I don't know if anyone else is, because the other two guys are just soulless, boring, fucking nothings. They're great at their playing their instruments, but just everything about them, both physically and like just anything they do, is so boring. Right. Like, who are these two just bros that walked on stage? Oh no, they're in the band. Okay, they just look like two guys that are generic.
Right.
Even DJ Lethal, just kind of the most generic.
He looks very jockey. People. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, they are very all generic looking. That's probably why Wes had to like dress up as, you know, like shadow monsters. I don't know how to describe like his. They're fucking cool though. The black contacts and like the way he's.
He wanted to be
shit.
A makeup artist before anything else. He wanted to do like special effects and makeup stuff like that.
Because I knew he's like into art, like sculpting and shit, and I don't know.
Was he into like the film stuff too? Like, kind of.
No, not really film stuff. Yeah, just mostly art.
It seems more like Fred was unfortunately the one into film. Now, before we go further in the story, for the show we try to come up with like a conspiracy theory for the band or something, right? So we couldn't really find one. So I have a conspiracy, and it's that Fred Durst is the devil and that he's tricking all these people and he's the ultimate huckster.
I didn't see that.
He is Kevin Spacey at the end of what the hell is that movie? Not the Seven. No. Not the Untouchables. What's the one with Stephen Baldwin?
Kaiser Soze.
Yeah, Kaiser Soze. That's Fred Durst. He's walking around like with a
usual
limp.
Usual Suspect.
He's walking around like a limp, and you're like, oh, Limp Bizkit, you know. But he's actually the boss, and he's fucking running shit. Like,
yeah, I could see that. Yeah, some of the stuff he...
It's just questionable. It's just like, how do you get this lucky?
Like, he likes inducing riots. Yeah. I've seen it once even myself, him almost starting a riot at PNC. Yeah, he went on an hour late and then was bitching because he was going on while the sun was still up. And he was going on before Creed. And there, so he went on an hour late, and then he was talking about the security guards. And he's like, "I think you guys should rush the stage and beat the security guards. They look like..." It was a K-Rock concert, and then Sharon Osbourne's backstage because Sabbath was playing.
Ozzy, make these goddamn biscuits calm down out there.
And so she pulls the plug. So he's like, "You should rush the..." Which is the last thing you want to do because everyone's like, "Hey, what the fuck?" And people start getting pissed, and we're like, "Oh boy, this is going to be great." We're like, "Let's go to the back," and we just like go to the back and just wait and watch. And like after like 10 minutes of people really getting pissed, they just played Nookie and got the fuck off. So they only played about 3 or 4 songs, and the whole time in between songs, he was just like, "Scott Stapp is a fucking walking back there like he's Michael Jackson. He's a piece of shit."
Like he's Michael Jackson.
Just a whole time ripping on Scott Stapp.
That's awesome. Yeah. So then, awesome.
Creed, like as like a joke to get back at him, got them all anger management pamphlets and sent them to them.
Oh, I heard that. Yeah, he signed them or something, yeah, right? Oh, that's good.
He, like,
that's
douchey back. So they put on, so that kind of backfired because then, because everything got fucked up, they had to put on Sabbath, and then Creed went on after Sabbath.
Oh my god, dude.
Because it was fucking 11:30 at that time. Creed went on stage. It was like almost midnight. Damn. And so they didn't want people to wait that long for Sabbath because that's what people came for. So
get
like, Creed,
up there, Scott.
Creed, you're going on. So yeah, they went on. The fucking place was like empty.
This
was
PNC.
Yeah.
You were there for the whole
That was in 2000.
I was going to try to do Scott Stapp singing War Pigs, but that's kind of too difficult right now. MC Fred and DJ Ready Rock put together this video.
Fred. MC Fred. That's a good one. I like that.
So, like, all these, like, radio stations that they're just pestering at this point, one of them gets them in touch with, I forget who it is, but it's a producer for some record label somewhere. And they're like, yeah, okay, MC Fred, put together, like, a demo video so we could show everybody or whatever. And
he's big on dancing still at this time.
Yeah, so, yeah, that's a big thing in the video. It's hit. So the video is, like, this grainy, really shitty video. He even says, he's like, "I know the video is all whack, but, yo, like, we're good.
Just give us money and we'll give you good stuff. Just give us any money and we'll come up with good stuff. We just don't have money now."
So, yeah, the video, he's got a turtleneck on, he's got a flat top haircut, and he's got 3 gold chains over the turtleneck.
Oh, my God. Was it a joke or was it serious?
No, it's serious.
Oh, my God.
Wait, this is early 90, like 92, something.
This
like that?
Is probably like 92, yeah. Yeah, like probably 92, 93, something like that. And he's dancing at one point. The DJ gets out from behind the turntables and starts dancing with them at some point.
DJ.
Ready Rock,
Ready,
I believe.
Rock.
What are they doing? Like bar mitzvahs and stuff? Like the video seat has that feel. Like it's in like a dance, like a hall, I think the video.
I think it's supposed to be Fred's apartment, or maybe it's his mom's house or something.
It looked like it was a hall.
It does, because it's like this weird, like, circular cutout thing in the wall. I don't know. It was like a very strange...
Right. I didn't know if they were playing, like, parties and weddings and shit, because it just seemed had that feel.
That would be fucking great. MC Fred just like, "I just want to wish you..."
Happy birthday!
Yeah.
Grandma!
They get the lo-fi videotape, and the record label's like, "Yeah, you guys need to like go wash cars or do something besides music because this is not gonna work out." And so Fred is like, "You don't understand my art. Like, this is what we do. We're not gonna change." So then Fred moves back to Jacksonville, which is weird. Like, this is like what, his second time? Oh no, third time in Jacksonville. He's born there, goes back to meet his dad, and then he goes back to live in a trailer and start doing tattoos on people.
Makes sense.
And from what I saw in the documentaries I watched, dude was fucking flat broke. He like basically was like, "I'm gonna go down to Jacksonville and I'm gonna make it." I don't know, like, where the logic is
your
there.
Your dream.
Yeah, I'm like, people go to New York, people go to Hollywood. He's like, I'm going down to Jacksonville.
not even Orlando
if
or something.
You can make it here.
Yeah.
You can make it here.
Yeah, so, but when he's down there, he starts playing with band. I got a couple bands he was in, I guess, Split 26, Malachi Sage, and 10 Foot Shindig.
That sounds like a winner.
Yeah.
I'd watch it.
And they start playing local clubs, and I don't know what it is, but the kids love Fred Durst right from the beginning, dude.
He's got stage presence.
Yeah, like he's dancing, he's rapping, and now his rapping is more like screaming now, so they're like, ooh, rapping and screaming. It's kind of like E-Town Concrete went pop to me, you know what I mean? They took that like hardcore that was going on in the 90s, and then they just kind of put it mainstream, and everyone's like, oh, I could wear a baseball hat and a basketball jersey, and I could be cool, you know?
That's what I thought.
Yeah, oddly enough, he had something. I don't know what
there's
exactly.
Something. Mm-hmm.
There's
I agree.
Something.
Yeah.
And he had it.
There's like, yeah, there's something, he makes it like undeniable. It's just like, I'm here. If you don't like me, fuck you. I'm still here, you know?
I have the worst voice, but I'm still rock the mic.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, he didn't really have much of a voice. Like,
he got a great scream,
mm-hmm.
but...
Yeah, that scream is pretty good. It's like that guttural, like...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really good. So then he eventually... And now he meets Sam Rivers while he's down there, and he's, the bass player, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so he meets him at a Chick-fil-A that Sam Rivers is working at. And Fred just goes up to Sam, and he's like... Hey, man, I heard you play, like, bass or something. You want to play bass? And Sam's like, no, I'm working at Chick-fil-A. Go away.
Is that what? How?
Yeah.
That's crazy. That's just freaking crazy.
Like, that could be... later in the show, we do play a game called Who Would Play Who in the Movie. And that would be a major pivotal plot point in the movie. Fred's putting his tray at the tray away, and he's like, hey, man, I heard you play bass, you know? So then Sam, I don't know, Fred pesters Sam into joining the fucking band with him.
It's like rapping. It's like rocking.
Yeah.
That's what he says to
He's
him.
He's like, go away. I'm cooking hamburgers.
Chicken burgers.
Chicken burgers. Yeah, so Sam gets in touch with his cousin?
Yeah, John Otto.
John Otto, yeah. So John Otto comes down to Jacksonville to meet them.
He had to take the Matthews Bridge to get there, I think.
I don't get that.
Take it to the Matthews Bridge.
Oh, gotcha. All right. And now the three of them start jamming, and Fred comes up with the name Limp Bizkit. And I guess, yeah, he said it was just the most appalling, like, name he could think of.
He's got all those other ones that he wanted, too. It's like Dimp Lip Shits and shit.
Really?
Yeah. I think one of them was Gimp Bizkit.
Gimp Bizkit.
Really?
Yeah. Or Blood Fart was another one,
too. Oh, yeah, Blood Fart. Think about this. Okay, so John...
More disgusting than Limp Bizkit.
Yeah. John and Sam are well-trained. Like, they're actually really good musicians from what I was reading. Like, they have a background in jazz and all this stuff. And you have Fred Durst telling you what to do, what the band's going to be called, and you're just taking it. You're like, oh, well, there's something about this guy.
See, they're just generic men that are just plopped out and okay. Just yes, man.
Let's do what the red cap says.
They probably were fucking scared of him because they're like, what is this guy?
He won't leave me alone. He knows where I live.
Well, what if they were just like,
just do what he says. Maybe he'll stop.
He's got all those tattoos. He looks like he could kick our asses.
Now, they were just jamming. They didn't have a guitarist.
Oh, no, Mike Smith, comes later. It's Rob Walters. Waters was in the band. Yeah, Rich just googled it. Thank you, Rich. Yeah, Rob Waters
All right.
was in the band.
That's right. So that's a guy I think they're talking to, and he's in this fake-ass documentary that has no music or no real affiliation with the band.
Unofficial, gotcha. So what's it called? They put together a demo, and they bring the demo to Korn. So it's... The three main members, John Otto, Sam Rivers, Fred Durst, Matt, whatever that guy's name was. And
Robson, I think.
Waters? I forget. And they take this demo to a Korn show. Korn plays the show.
They weren't big yet.
Korn's not
playing
big.
Little clubs.
But
they were opening for somebody, I think. Korn was.
Bio, not Biohazard. Was it Biohazard?
I'm not sure. It was some shit I never
heard.
Rich,
can you Google that? Who did Korn open for when Fred Durst?
Oh, sick of it all.
Sick of it all. There you go. Yeah. That's right. Yeah. So again, Fred, just persistent motherfucker that he is, bothers fucking Fieldy and Head to hang out with them, and he's just like.
Yeah, promised him a tattoo or something.
Yeah, and he fucked up heads and wrote Norn.
Yeah, so what is it?
Korn. He's like fucking N.
Oh my God! And this motherfucker is rich as shit.
There was some interview where they're talking, and Fred Durst is so like, "No, it says Korn. I know it says it's a K. You gotta look. It's a K. It doesn't say Norn or Horn. It's a K." And he's just like, really, years later, still. This is he's a millionaire at this point, and he's still being like, "No, it was a good tattoo. Head's wrong."
Yeah, the guy who wakes up every day with this tattoo on his body is wrong.
He's wrong. He says Korn. You could obviously see.
Could you imagine screwing up? Like, I'd get fired from my job on the first day if I screwed something up. This guy screws up a tattoo and it's still Fred Durst from Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, right.
Still, and it wasn't like he had a bus, though. They had to go to his trailer to get these tattoos. Yeah. So, wrong on you guys.
Yeah, seriously.
You went to a trailer in Jacksonville to get a tattoo, you idiots.
Never thought about that, but that is good.
Fred Durst couldn't get a woman to go back to his trailer, but he got Korn.
Now, is this when Korn was, like, getting into meth and shit? Do you think he was just like, I got some sick meth, bro?
The only one at this point that would have been on meth would probably have been Head. I think the other guys beat it by then. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, maybe he would have definitely gotten the meth or something.
Maybe Fred was like, hey, you got a little bit of crystal.
Definitely possible.
Now, okay, I got a good one for who's going to play Fred in the Limp Bizkit movie, but we'll get to that. So during this meeting, they give Korn the demo, and Korn listens to it and is basically like, nah, man, this isn't very good.
Is that true?
Yeah. They're like, nah, we're good. This isn't. Like, do something different.
Yeah, they're like, yeah, maybe you got to fix something there.
I thought they gave him the demo was counterfeit, though.
And then not yet. There was a time before that, and they were like, the guitarist sucks, basically. Yeah. And they were like, get rid of the guitarist, and maybe you got something.
Really?
Yeah, so they got rid of that Rob Waters or whatever.
Yeah, Rob Waters, yeah.
So they got rid of him and got Wes.
Yeah, so, yeah, exactly. So they get rid of Rob, and then I think Wes is friends with, who's the drummer? Otto.
Yeah.
So Wes and Otto, I think, went to school together, and then Wes comes down to Florida, like, on a whim, and is just like, all right, I'll just be in Limp Bizkit now. That's totally fine. Like.
Because Wes's parents were like big ministers or something. Like there was something deep in with a church.
Mm-hmm.
And he just wanted not to do that.
I think I read when he was 18, he left home because he was just like fat sick of church.
Yeah.
He's like, I don't believe in this and I have to go just to my parents.
He grew up in Nashville and he was not into country. And that's what the guitar teachers wanted him to play is country.
Oh, there you go.
And, yeah.
He was like, I forgot what bands he was influenced by.
Like Ministry, probably, or something.
Trying to bring in, like, rock. And they were like, no, let's play, like, Merle Haggard. That's, what, like, that's literally what I read. I read that online. They're like, Merle Haggard. He's like, I don't want to do that.
So just, right. So he's just, like, done with that fucking scene. Like. And then when Wes comes down, he rehearses and plays a show his first night with them?
Yeah, that's Fred's in Philly, I think, doing tattoos or something.
Mm.
They have a show the night Fred gets back. So they rehearse once, their 20-minute set, I think, before they go out. So he was, playing music with the other guys, and he was probably like, this band's fucking amazing. I can't wait to hear this singer. And then he comes back, and he's like, oh, wow, this was okay.
Like, is that your impression of Wes? Like, he was, like, embarrassed of Limp Bizkit, or?
Yeah, I feel maybe at the beginning, because he was wearing, like, the masks and stuff. Like, he would wear this bird mask on stage before anything, and, like, then he started showing his face and stuff, and then he started wearing the masks again and stuff. He kind of was.
I don't know. It was kind of hard to get a because he seems like he is embarrassed by the band, and then on other occasions he's like, "No, I love my fans, and this is my family," and blah blah blah. Like,
yeah, he's very hot and cold with it.
He was pissed as fuck that somebody already had a KFC bucket over there.
Probably.
He's like, what am I going to do, Baghead? That's stupid. I'll just paint my face so nobody recognizes me.
Baghead. Yeah, he's got a paper bag over his face.
It says Kroger's on the side.
So then they record a new demo with Wes. Wes, again, they go and pester local radio stations and get the demo played on the air.
Is this that payola thing? Oh, no, that's later on.
I don't know what that is. Yeah, you're going to have to fill me in on that one.
It's after Counterfeit comes out.
So the band starts to get a local buzz in Jacksonville, and then Korn listens to the new demo. They're blown away, and it leads to two labels fighting over Limp Bizkit. It's Mojo of MCA and Flip of Interscope.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes quits the band the first time because he just can't get along with Fred, as far as I could see.
Yeah, creative differences is what I heard.
Yeah, it seems that way. If one guy is Fred and the other guy is Wes, it doesn't seem like they're going to match up exactly.
They signed with one label, and then Wes quit, and then when they re-signed with the other label he joined, is that accurate?
Yeah, so the way I saw it in the documentary, that's pretty much it. Like, what happens is they're going to sign with Mojo.
They're driving to L.A.
So they're driving to L.A. from Jacksonville. And then in Texas, the van flips over and they all almost get killed or something.
Oh, wow. Yes.
So they kind of are at the midway point. They either go L.A. or they go back to Jacksonville. And then they take it as a sign. They say, fuck Mojo. And then they drive back, get Wes, and then they sign with Flip, which is Interscope.
So even God couldn't stop Limp Bizkit, even though he tried. He tried pretty hard.
The Antichrist, there you go.
There you go. Fred Durst is like the Antichrist, yeah. So, yeah, so that's what happens. They drive back. Then they write like 9 songs in 4 days, so they bust out $3 Bill, Y'all pretty fast. And, yeah, Counterfeit is like the first single off of it, right?
Yeah.
And I just to say something nice about Limp Bizkit, the guitar work on Counterfeit is fucking awesome.
Oh, yeah.
The harmonics are cool.
They also paid a radio station. I forgot where, if it was in Jacksonville or where it was from. I think it was not a lot. It was like $5,000 to play their song for like every hour.
30 times in a day, and we'll give you $5,000 or something like that.
Yeah. And they did that, and people were pissed, but it also worked because it got people talking about it.
I think Fred was quoted saying something like, that's a not cool thing to do, but hey, what are you going to do?
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, so they start getting a little bit of an audience. The album doesn't really do well at first, but they are getting a bigger and bigger audience. They do something like, what is this?
Ladies' Night in Cambodia?
Yeah, Ladies' Night in Cambodia.
Yeah, they just let women in for free because he realized there was no women in the crowd. And he's like, well, let's get some women in here to get beat up and crushed to death. So let's make it free for them to die.
Limp Bizkit.
Yeah.
Crushing your ribs as you're trying to press for air.
Oh, my God. So, yeah, they let the ladies in for free. And then they start doing this cover of Faith on Tour.
Mm.
That's the way I was.
Just before they record it?
Yeah, yeah. So they have the album out already. Then they start doing Faith. And I think they were also doing Straight Up by Paul on Tour.
Yeah, I heard that. I tried looking it up. I couldn't find it.
Yeah, I couldn't find it either. And so Faith becomes popular, so they record it and they put it back on. They put it on a new reissue of the album.
I heard Ross didn't want it either. Ross Robinson, who produced it. Yeah, because they did it in Indigo Ranch in Malibu, where Korn did their first two albums. And did them. So
but the producer didn't want them.
He kind of didn't want it on there originally because I think it sounded different than it did.
Okay,
like maybe it wasn't as
heavy.
Heavy or not as heavy? Not it wasn't as like light as it gets.
Gotcha.
Maybe or something.
Oh, it was like too like
it was
driving.
Too heavy the whole time or something. He's like, no, this is just stupid sounding.
I mean, it's a good thing that they do because that's the single that basically blows the band up. And then right after that single gets popular, the album goes platinum.
I remember I had the Faith single. Like it was, I would go to the record show and just buy these like random radio singles.
Right.
And it was like promotional use only. And I got the Faith one, and I brought it to a school dance because you could play music. And the girl who like ran like the thing, you'd have to give her the CD. Mm. And I was like, oh, I got this CD. I think it'd be good to play here. Just like a joke because it was Faith and it was edited.
Right.
And she's like, Limp Bizkit, no, we're not playing this. And then that was like September of 98. And then by 99.
By October, she was regretting it.
But yeah, later on, she came up. She's like, do you have that Limp Bizkit thing?
No.
I swear to God, she was asking for it in later on in the months. And I'm like, no, I don't. So I was like, I was over it. At that point, I started 8th grade. I was like, okay, this is not for me.
So you're just in and out. You're just boom.
About a year, two years at the most.
Wow.
Was what I felt. Once Nookie was, I was like, this is unfucking believable.
Yeah. It got like, I can't say that's where it got really over the top. It was kind of always over the top.
Yeah, it was always over the top, but it was like its own underground. It wasn't in your face. It wasn't on MTV.
Rock. I mean, it was rock. Like on Counterfeit, there's like quote unquote rapping and stuff. Mm-hmm. But still, it's a rock scene.
Yeah.
Fucking rocks.
I forget who said this quote, but some metal guy was like, They hate Fred Durst because he ruined metal for a whole generation because of the new metal thing. Everybody just points a finger like, I think even West was just like, yeah, you know, Fred, he takes a lot of the blame for all of Limp Bizkit.
Well, yeah, he would. Why wouldn't he?
Yeah. But yeah, it just ruined metal for a whole generation.
That's interesting. And the thing that bothers me is that I don't know where the people that like... I mean, there are fucking a lot of people that purchased Significant Other mm-hmm. and Chocolate Starfish, and don't know where they are anymore.
Yeah.
I really don't.
Yeah. Where are those million people in a week?
They're kind of like...
Chocolate Starfish went platinum in a week of it being fucking out. 400,000 the first day.
Yeah, that's insane. That's
all you hear is, Limp Bizkit
sucks. Yeah.
It's kind of like Nickelback fans, you know what I mean?
They're just going to say that 100%.
They're like the most popular band in the country, yet you how many Nickelback fans do you know? I don't know any of them.
What's going on? How are they millionaires?
I think the fans just moved on because as soon as that genre kind of expired or whatever.
It ran its course. It needed to expire.
Yeah, it ran its course fast.
It
came and went, yeah.
They just moved on.
It was kind of like...
it was less than 10... Like, for the mainstream, it was less than 10 years. Because it didn't really get mainstream until, like, 97, new metal.
Yeah.
And it was done by 2003.
Yeah.
It was, like, over. So...
It was like our generation carried that shit and was like right when we graduated high school, mm-hmm. dropped it off. We're like, no, that's okay.
A lot of people say like, 9/11 was like the where new metal, that was the downhill of new metal. Because everyone like after that, like they didn't want to be so angry kind of. And it was like, oh, this stuff is kind of negative. And
so you're telling me that 9/11 ruined new metal?
Yeah, well, no, oversaturation and garbage lyrics ruined new metal.
Gotcha.
Well, right after 9/11, they 100%, a lot of radio stations changed up their
playlists. Yep.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, everything. Yeah, kind of changed after 9/11 with new metal, and it was just like not as big. Like all the albums, like 2001 was Limp Bizkit's biggest album. West left then, and like that was when everything had downhill since then.
Well, you know what? Before we skip too far ahead,
let's go back.
Where we're at right now, the band goes platinum now, and they go on to record Significant Other. Everybody knows Limp Bizkit at this point, right?
That's when most of the mainstream kind of is starting to get, once Nookie came out.
Right, yeah. I would say, like, this is where I actually got introduced to Limp Bizkit, probably, because and Together Now. I was, like, huge into Wu-Tang back in the day, like, middle school. So Method Man doing that fucking song, I was like, okay, yeah, well, check these guys out. That beat is awesome for the And Together Now.
Yeah.
And then, like, even at the time, I was like, oh, you know, Fred's not that bad. I try to listen back to it now. I'm like,
it's unlistenable.
Just want the instrumental, man, or just maybe just the Method Man part stacked together.
I hate you guys.
It's like, do what he does with Old Dirty Bastard does in Shimmy Shimmy Y'all. Just put Method Man part, and then the second verse, just make it in reverse.
Gotcha, right.
And then just play that verse again the third time.
Yeah.
Now, did you hear about how Fred got his red hat? The story.
Oh, yeah, this is
hats,
also where Fred starts wearing the red Yankee cap, right?
He started wearing it a little bit before that, like in Faith video. He's got it, and on Family Values, he was wearing it. But the legend is, he went here.
Wait, everybody help. Okay, go.
All right, so he goes to this flea market.
Ooh.
And he sees a red Yankees cap.
What?
And, that's weird, I never seen that, and he bought it. It was just a bootleg. That's how he got it. He bought a bootleg Yankees hat. They made a wrong color. And he probably bought it for $5.
A trendsetter. And
yep.
Everyone wanted that.
Yeah.
Every annoying asshole kid, like in eighth grade, that was... saw him on TRL wanted a silly colored Yankee hat.
And that's when like everybody had different colored Yankee caps at the time. That's so crazy. Like he probably helped set that trend.
Yeah, I really believe that.
The wacky Yankees
that
hats that are different colors.
I wonder if the Yankees would have an official statement on that.
Ooh.
I would love to.
I'd love to hear you.
Would it be great if it was like Fred Durst and Steinbrenner from
Rich at ML
from Seinfeld?
I'm going to put this together.
We're going to start
that. We need all the different colors.
Yeah. Red ones, blue ones, green ones, who knows? It's going to be big.
Did it all for the Nookie.
Yeah. The Killing Independent Fred.
So when did Fred put on the bodysuit at Woodstock and run across the stage?
Wait, say that again? he was wearing a big actually, in the Nookie video, he's wearing a Gore-Tex jacket.
Yeah, he is. He's wearing a big Gore-Tex jacket in the Nookie video.
It's a bubble jacket, right?
Yeah.
Gore-Tex in New York, too.
He
gets arrested.
Wow.
I think he actually got it from Vandalay Industries,
if I'm not mistaken. Wow. Limp is Biscuit and Seinfeld connection. Huge. We're exposing this.
I think Seinfeld is based off of Fred Durst's life, as a matter of fact. Yeah. So Eminem's also on this album, or he was supposed to be.
Yeah, that song is not on the album.
It's not on the album. It gets pulled. Now, Eminem is also on Interscope through Aftermath with Dr. Dre or whatever. Yeah. So I guess, like, you know, Jimmy Iovine or whatever is like, okay, you know, hey, Eminem, go over here with this guy and let's make some music.
Weird, they didn't talk about Limp Bizkit and the Defiant ones. I was waiting for something, not even a mention or anything.
They didn't, no, they did not. That's correct. I'm surprised that... That's a thing.
Yeah, it wasn't even mentioned, like not even a 5 minute thing or anything. Just nothing about Nu Metal or Limp Bizkit.
Especially because this album sells 600,000 copies in the first week, and then Jimmy Iovine makes Fred Durst the vice president of A&R at Interscope Records.
Yeah. Wow.
What the fuck? Are you kidding me? Like, how does that happen?
He brought a lot of bands that actually did good. Like
you were saying before the pop, who were some of the bands that he signed?
He signed Cold. That was like right after $3 Bill, y'all.
And what was that Cold's big song? Just in case people don't know.
Stupid Girl was.
Stupid Girl. No, wait, that's garbage.
That's garbage. There's Stupid Girl. There's what else was there? The End of the World and
It's the Just Got Wicked of stuff the like world.
That. No, they. No. Now that you're saying that, they're not good.
Yeah,
they're not a very good band. What else? Puddle of Mud, also not a good band. Stained, also.
Puddle of Mud is around because of Limp Bizkit.
Yep. Yeah,
that's impressive.
He's in the video for that "Slap My Ass" song, and I think he produced the album.
That's as much as I like the way Puddle of Mud. They had a lot of airtime.
Yeah.
So yeah,
so he got. He did. He was. He made money for them.
Now, there's also a story that I read that him and Jimmy Iovine, and if people don't know Jimmy Iovine, he's the owner of Interscope Records. So he's sitting down with Jimmy Iovine, and he punches him in the face at a fancy restaurant, and he's still the vice president of A&R. So one of two things are happening. This is actually Satan, and he's pulling the wool over everybody's eyes. Or this is some WWF bullshit, and they're like, all right, this is what you're going to do, Fred. You're going to punch me in the face. We're going to give you some cred. You beat your boss up.
Yeah.
And,
I see that being more, because I can't see Fred Durst doing anything out of anger physically, like,
yeah, because
other than kicking a security guard in the head.
Yeah, or punching a fan in the face, I saw, too. Oh,
okay,
Yeah, because he seems kind of like a little bit of a pussy, because like there's always paparazzi running up to Fred Durst and they're like, hey Fred, such and such said this about you, and his response is always the same. He's like, oh man, really? Oh, I why they gotta say something like that?
Fred Durst, more like Fred Angst. Man, fuck you guys,
man, that's not nice.
How about Ben Stiller? Oh, that's why I guess we're getting a little bit Ben Stiller's all over it.
His favorite motherfucker.
Yeah, and like Ben Stiller was in a bunch of video. Well,
he's on the CD.
and that's Chocolate Starfish, but we're talking about significant other, right?
Yeah, let's
So now he's the vice president of A&R at Interscope somehow, and he's headlining Woodstock 99 with Limp Bizkit, right?
Yeah, they weren't really headlining. They played in the daytime.
They played in daytime? Yeah. Okay.
Who?
Limp Bizkit.
No.
Woodstock.
With who? Oh, Limp. No, Woodstock was with Limp Bizkit and... No, I'm saying, like, you're saying that they were the headliners?
No, they weren't.
No, I thought, I have it written down here. No, they weren't headlining.
Yeah, they played, it was still sunny out. I'm like, I think they were the first heavy band to play.
Well, yeah, so there's a riot ensues because they do break stuff and they start ripping down the plywood and fucking, there's all these, like, sexual assaults going on in the crowd and all this like fucked up shit.
And they can't see it because the crowd, Woodstock's crowd, you can't tell. You can't pick one person out of that.
I think people were just angry that that DMX and Ice Cube weren't on stage yet. Yeah. First off, like, think about the original Woodstock. You got Jimi Hendrix, you got like I think Pink Floyd might have been there. And then, all the way to 99. No, yeah, Pink Floyd was there. When Syd Barrett was in the band.
Wow,
there's a picture of all of them. Janis Joplin, The Who, everybody. Wow. Yeah. But, like, you have all those classic bands from the original. And then cut to 1999 Woodstock. You have Limp Bizkit, DMX.
ICP. Lit.
Yeah. Did anybody, like, smash Cherry? Guitar and sit on fire or anything? Or play the national anthem during?
They played the Chili Peppers. Wearing those light bulb suits. Was that 94?
I'm not sure, actually. Yeah,
it might have been 94. There were.
I mixed those two up together. They're like the same show.
But, yeah, they did "Light My Fire" or something. Or no, Jimi Hendrix.
Oh, yeah. Flea does the national anthem on the bass,
I think. Does he?
Yeah, I think that's what it is.
And they, that's Hard Fire. But they would edit the footage of Limp Bizkit in with the fire, so people hated Limp Bizkit more. Like, there was no fires when Limp Bizkit was
doing. Oh, really?
But they kind of edit the footage to make it seem like Limp Bizkit had all these fires started or something.
Because they got a lot of the blame for all the riots and all that shit that happened.
Yeah, he took the pieces that they were breaking off, and he was standing on the boards in the crowd and like having them like crowd surf.
Oh my god, dude.
So that with all those people, who's not going to get fucking hurt and shit and trying to touch them? And
I read too that they blamed the venue for all the violence and shit. They were like, no, they
did
we
that
were
about
Limp Bizkit. They knew we were badass. Like, no, they should have known better.
That was, I think, for the Big Day Out.
Oh, Big Day Out? Okay, was, yeah, we're going to come up on that in a second.
Yeah.
But yeah, apparently during this Woodstock mayhem, Fred says out to the crowd, people are getting hurt. Don't let nobody get hurt. But I don't think you should mellow out either. Like, I don't know. What the fuck does that mean? Like... he goes, that's what Alanis Morissette had you motherfuckers do. If it falls, if someone falls, pick him up. I don't know. It sounds like he knows what's going on. He's kind of like pushing them a little bit.
Yeah, like he did that a lot at the Big Day Out Fest where he's like trying to kind of be helpful, but then he'll go back and say something that totally like takes that away. He's like, you guys should help each other up. And then punch the guy next to you in the fucking dick. Like, not that, but like stuff like that.
Yeah.
And, yeah, at the Big Day Out Fest, while they're trying to get people to step back, they're like, tell them to take a step back. And he's like, y'all should gotta take a step back or something. I don't know. Like,
wow. So he's just like...
Then the security guards are telling Limp Bizkit to stop. He's like, because he just keeps talking and making it worse. Mm-hmm. And the guy's like, stop, shut up. And he's like waving his hands, telling Fred to shut up. The security guards. He's like, wait, what'd you say? Hey, yeah, that faggot right there. Let me get him. And that's what Fred Durst starts saying to the security guard. Starting to cause a fight with the security guard now that they're trying to save this woman. So Fred Durst is not helping. He's adding more bullshit.
What
to
a scumbag.
And then off stage, you could hear them being like, oh, we're fucking done. Let's get the fuck out of here. Let's leave. This is bullshit. And they're like saying how bullshit it is.
Yeah.
They can't go on with the show because someone's dying and they need to like help people. And they're
is it just Fred saying this? Or
it's Fred and someone else.
Okay.
Some other American person they're talking to.
He probably just thought he had this image to keep up with.
Yeah.
Like, he probably wanted people to stay safe, but he probably was also like, well, I don't want to sound like a pussy.
Exactly. Right, right.
That's what I definitely think it is.
And I kind of think that also leads into people like disliking them more because it's just like...
Yeah.
You fake. Know, yeah, it's so obviously fake where you're just like, okay, you're trying way too hard to be Mr., I don't know, rock star guy.
Mr. I don't care. I'm too cool for it.
So 2000, Durst announces the next album's going to be titled Chocolate Starfish and the Hot Dog Flavored Water.
And they thought it was a joke.
Yeah, the press thinks this is all a joke, which is fucking great, dude.
But just, the guy from Limp Bizkit tells you that. You're like, yeah, probably. The band's called Limp Bizkit.
It's yeah.
Why would that be so...
Do they think the album was a joke or the band itself was just a joke at this point?
I think they always kind of thought it was a joke. Like, no one took it serious. Like, critics didn't praise them at all. So it was kind of like...
some cool reviews about Wes Borland's guitar work.
Oh, well, of course. Yeah, he's going to, but as a band.
So Durst is also becoming a huge advocate of Napster at this point. Company sponsors their 2000 tour. So...
This was like, Napster was like on its way out anyway at that point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you know, nobody, they were trashing them so bad. Lars went on Millionaire and trashed them. And it's just like, maybe Napster must have thrown them a few bucks and was like, be an advocate for us. And
Redders
probably just didn't care.
Yeah. He was just like, well, Napster's paying me.
I'm getting money somehow from it.
Yeah, yeah. Right? So then that year, they also perform at the VMAs, and Durst did a duet with Christina Aguilera
on
the
song
Living It Up.
Yeah.
Richard Patrick of Filter actually went on to say about the performance, it embarrassed us all.
Him of all people, too. I'm glad that the guy from Filter thinks Fred Durst is an embarrassment.
T-1000's brother.
Yeah, T-1000's brother. Take a picture. He got naked on an airplane, and that's what Take a Picture is about. But Fred Durst embarrassed him.
So everybody starts, like, fucking with Fred, and they're like, why would you do this with Christine? Why, Fred? Why would you do this with Christina Aguilera?
My separate knob.
What year was that?
This is 2000, and Fred responds, hey, man, you know, I just did it all for the nookie.
This guy's killing it. He's the man.
Yeah. Kind of, right? You're like... You hate him, but you're like, maybe he did have, maybe he banged Christina Aguilera. I don't know.
Yeah.
Apparently, he also, around this time, is in a relationship with Britney Spears, too.
I heard that, yeah, but
She denies all of it.
I could imagine.
I don't know if he's banging hot chicks or he's just saying that he is and they're all just calling him out. I have no idea. So Chocolate Starfish drops, and like you said before, Ryan, 400,000 copies on its first day and 1 million copies in its first week. And at the time, it was the fastest-selling rock record of all time.
Ooh, what beat
rock.
It?
Beating, it beat Pearl Jam's Verses.
No, and it's still to this day?
Think so, yeah. Probably, I think it's still the fastest-selling.
Because nobody buys CDs.
Yeah.
Right, yes. Industry kind of took a slump after that. So the album's singles are Rollin', which is...
The bomb.
The bomb. My Way and My Generation. And when I saw the titles for My Way and My Generation, and I think you were even seeing when you mentioned some of the Cold songs that you were mentioning before.
Yeah.
It's like Fred Durst just like finds songs that are already songs and then just titles them the same.
Yeah.
Like My Generation is in reference to obviously The Who.
Who, yeah.
My Way is like Frank Sinatra. Right,
yeah.
You know? It would have been great if he did a Frank Sinatra version of...
Or if he had another song, My Blue Suede Shoes.
Yeah. It's...
Yeah.
What was the fastest song?
Adele.
Oh, okay, so Adele beat Limp Bizkit recently.
Wait, that's not rock.
Rock. No, yeah, rock record.
Neither is
rock
fucking record. Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, right.
That's a good point.
All that shit bothers me. All those genres.
You can't, yeah, I mean, I don't know. As far as, go for it.
Nah, so like, Chocolate Starfish comes out. They're kind of sitting on top of the world.
Right.
I feel like... The rug was just pulled out from underneath the whole thing after that. Ben Stiller was in the video, right?
Wait, what video was he in?
Rolling.
Oh, Rolling, gotcha.
Up in his Bentley and throws Fred Durst the keys like he's a valet.
Lord.
Oh,
Lord.
Oh, my God. And it's just like, yeah, but I mean, how old were we? I would think I was like 15, 16.
Yeah, we were like 15, 16.
It's just like... This is so. I don't know. I don't remember thinking, "Wow, this guy's cool."
Right.
I just remember being like, "The music's awesome." To
right.
Me.
Gotcha.
And again, I like pop, so I just really liked it. And
yeah.
For some reason, a bunch of people, like I said, that are now banished off the face of the earth, right. Also liked it.
Right. All these people that disappeared into the mist.
I think they were all in 9/11.
Oh.
Because that's right about when their time.
Oh my God.
They were playing on the Twin Towers in that video, so.
In Rolling?
Yeah.
I feel as though, let's say, Significant Other had a bunch of songs that got airtime and that were like quote unquote good songs like Break Stuff and Together Now.
Right.
What was the one where they're in Milk at the end?
Rearrange, yeah.
They had several songs off of that CD. But then once they came over to Chocolate Starfish, they had Rollin', and then I feel like those other hits were like...
Yeah, they were second. They weren't as big.
They weren't as big.
Yeah.
My Generation. Like that fucking...
That one was kind of bigger, but then like My Way was not as...
And it just totally, that was it. They just were like... It didn't gain any momentum, and it lost momentum pretty quick.
It's like if... I just look at them as like you were saying earlier, like sellouts... Whatever, like the now the Undertaker's rolling down to the ring in WWE to Rolling,
yes,
right?
I forgot all about that.
It's like
also the time I got out of wrestling was the same time around I got out of Limp Bizkit.
So now 2001. Okay, so now we're up to the big Day Out Festival in Australia. So this is in Sydney. The fans rushed the stage in a mosh pit, and Jennifer Mikulik. It's a teenager, and she dies of asphyxiation. Mishalik. You said that he was saying something screwed up during that, too, or no?
But yeah, just all that stuff he was saying just wasn't helping.
Right.
And he
right.
just kind of added to, like, them not helping and having them, like, step back a couple feet, and, like, people just weren't... Then, to no music, people were, like, circle-pitting and shit, even to nothing. They just were, like, rowdy as fuck, ready to do that, and...
So the Australian government actually wants to prosecute Durst at this point, too. And he testifies in court that the concert's organizer, they warned them ahead of time about the potential dangers of such minimal security. Which
Yeah, he was saying that on the mic, too. He's like, I told you, when Limp Bizkit comes here, you're going to need extra security.
Who said that?
Fred.
Nice.
He was saying that on the mic while this is all going down, too.
Right. But in the same sense, he's also not helping the situation either. Yeah,
he's trying to keep the show going, and that doesn't need to be happening. He needs to, you know, just fucking act like a human.
Yeah, they actually, I'm reading right here. So yeah, after giving the witness testimonies and videotapes and stuff like that, Fred gets off of all the charges, but they're still like, "Oi, you shouldn't have done that, mate."
They're gonna boot him like in Simpsons.
That episode of The Simpsons, they bend over Fred Durst and kick him in the ass. This year, they also release a remix album called New Old Songs, and it features P. Diddy on the album, DJ Premier, Butch Vig, Timberland, Everlast. Like, I don't understand how Fred Durst gets this kind of attention. Like, it just makes no sense to me.
Well, they're big. Everyone wants to be part of it. They're like, oh, yeah, they'll work with anyone.
Yeah, true. Borland leaves the band, I guess, because of that concert screws him up.
Really. Yeah, everything, like, is saying that he's going through a divorce. Mm-hmm. 9/11 just happened. Yeah. The girl just died.
Right.
And everything. He's just like, all right, I need to get the fuck out of here.
Yeah, and because he's a traitor.
Yeah, right. I think he spends a little time playing guitar for Manson.
I heard a press conference where Manson was talking about him playing guitar, but I don't think they've actually ever played live.
Is that right?
I believe. Maybe they did, but I never seen footage or anything about it.
And I feel
it
like I read Reznor, too.
Yeah, maybe.
So then, let's see here. So then, because Borland leaves, Durst holds a put your guitar where your mouth is competition. Ugh.
I remember this. When was that? That was 2001?
Probably 2001, 2002.
2002, maybe, yeah. Oh. And he claims he's going to find the illest guitar. Oh, my God. The illest guitarist the world has ever seen.
Like, I remember hearing, and the internet wasn't even big back then.
Right,
yeah. Didn't really have the like, Wiki didn't exist. So I remember hearing a rumor that they got... They had, like, tryouts or whatever.
Right.
They ordered a bunch of fucking pizzas or something. I swear to God, this is what I heard, like, from back then, a reliable source. And they were like, oh, the pizzas ran out. And everybody that played riffs had to sign, like, a waiver saying that whatever they are playing, if it's original, it now belongs to Limp Bizkit.
Wow.
Yeah, I heard that too. Yeah.
I don't know if that's legit.
I don't know if true that is.
Google that?
I do remember hearing that.
I don't know if that's possible.
Tommy Lee just did that with his Methods of Mayhem album. He's like, send me stuff and you'll get credited. And people just sent in, like, guitar riffs and some music. And he was like, oh, I'm going to use it. And just put their name on it and just, like, made it.
Hey, everybody,
it's kind of interesting, kind of sad, though.
Yeah, yeah.
But, like, at the same time, like, eh.
Yeah, but if...
Kind of cool, I guess, because he is crediting on that at least.
Getting credited for
Yeah, exactly.
I would,
like,
agree with
they
that.
They did in Limp Bizkit. And then after all those things, they went and got a guy who was in Snot.
Yeah, I was just going to say...
He was already in a band. The lead singer died in a car
He's looking for the illest guitarist in the world. You know, you got... let's see here. You got Joe Satriani. You got... I don't know anybody, but yeah, they get the Snot guitarist Mike Smith. And he doesn't even last in the band from what I read. he helps a little bit with the next album.
Results may vary,
but he doesn't do all the guitar work on it.
Really?
Like, Head is, I think, on it a little bit from Korn. Yeah. I forget who else, but... Yeah, so that album, that's one with Behind Blue Eyes on it.
Yeah.
And Eat You Alive.
Eat You Alive.
With Harriet the Spy. Michelle Trachtenberg.
No, it's not Michelle Trachtenberg. It's Thora Birch.
Ooh.
She's in, what do you call it?
Eat You Alive?
Yeah. It's Thora Birch tied up from Monkey
Ooh,
Trouble.
Yeah. Fuck. No, you're right.
Okay,
right. Michelle Trachtenberg was in a different music video for a different band. Fun.
Yeah, and then he also gets, like, doesn't he get Halle Berry?
Yeah, and he's making out with her for, like, half of the video.
Gothica, I think that.
Yeah,
right. Oh, Gothica. I forgot about that movie. Yeah.
Awful.
Yeah, it's a bad movie. So then Limp Bizkit tours briefly with Metallica on the Summer Sanitarium tour.
Oh, yeah, I think Mudvayne, Iron Man 5000.
Oh, goodness. That's Limp a good Bizkit. Tour.
Yeah, I can't remember who else.
But so they play the Chicago leg of the tour, and what's the Man Cow?
Is that yeah.
This shock jock radio guy is telling people on the radio, go to Limp Bizkit, throw debris on the stage.
Oh, my God.
And just say, fuck you, Fred Durst. So the crowd does that. And
why?
You see footage of Fred, and he's on stage. I forget. I think it's Nookie, and he's just doing that, like, yeah, like, in it. And then he just gets hit with a bottle and doesn't. It just keeps going. Like, doesn't even affect him.
Dude.
Like, true professional. You know, good job there, Fred. So the whole chant.
Did they have a beef? Why did Man Cow do that?
I don't know. I think
this was like the beginning of people hating on Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, because Metallica fans were in that like metal group where it's just like, Fred Durst ruined metal.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, so they're like, fuck you, Fred Durst, all in unison. I think they do six songs. He throws the mic down. He's like, fuck y'all. He just takes off. So then, oh, this is what happens. Before he gets kicked off the stage, he actually says, he's going to say, we are the best band in the world. And the roadie pulls the mic before he gets to say in the world. They're like, no, Fred, we're not going to allow you to say that on stage. You can incite riots. You can flip everybody off. But we will not let you say you're the best band in the world.
Now that's too much.
So then, Borland.
So what is this? The fourth time their mics are pulled in their career?
Yeah.
Like
at least in this timeline.
At least that we know of. That like made
poor Limp Bizkit, man. They can't catch a fucking break.
Yeah, that's what it is. They catch too many breaks.
Yeah. All right.
And most of those breaks are in that girl's ribs.
Oh, man, dude. Borland returns to the band in 2004, and they record Unquestionable Truth.
Volume 1. Yeah, that was a good one. That it was like kind of them going back to their roots, kind of like. And it was like heavier, and he wasn't whining, and the songs were like longer, and like. It was good. I liked it.
Yeah, I read that it was more, I didn't get a chance to listen to any of it, but I did read that it is a more experimental take on rap rock.
Yeah,
really.
I'd say that. Yeah. The first song sounds kind of Toolish listening to it.
I've read that too. Yeah, that he has very a lot of tool-y. Maynard kind of lyrics in there. It's like a little bit more post hardcore than it is like that rap rock kind of thing, you know. The album Unquestionable Truth was released as an underground album, like no
promotion or anything. Yeah, I didn't know it came out until like after, and at that point I didn't give a shit about them, you know. I didn't since like 2099 I didn't give a shit about them.
Mm-hmm.
So by that point I was kind of like, well, everyone hates Limp Bizkit, let me look into it and see what they're up to now that no one cares.
Let me go.
Oh, wow, they actually are back to being all right.
They say this is probably like the best direction that they took. But Borland's kind of – you can see that, like, Borland and Fred don't get along because Borland says that the underground album was, like, self-sabotage for the band. And this is where Borland gets to express himself the most. I think – is this – no, Gold Cobra has the first guitar solo from Borland in the band, I believe.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly. It could be from Questionable Truth, but, yeah, maybe it's in Gold Cobra.
So then – the band releases Greatest Hits with a Z, and they go on hiatus. So it's 2006. Now Durst starts to dabble in film, and he co-stars in this movie in 2006, Population 436. Did you guys see any of that?
No.
That's
a movie?
Yeah. It's a mystery horror thriller starring Jeremy Sisto, who's the...
Oh, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, if you don't know him, he's the dickhead boyfriend in Clueless.
No.
And Durst plays the sheriff. It's kind of like a Texas Chainsaw Massacre thing going on.
All right.
Durst is kind of like, you ain't getting out of here alive, boy.
What year was this released?
2006. Yeah, 2006. 2007, he directs the movie Education of Charlie Banks, starring Jesse Eisenberg and Jason Ritter. I'm like, what the fuck? How do you get a director job like that? That is...
in, like, the least Limp Bizkit-y time.
Yeah, like, you're using your Satan powers to overcome someone's mind to sign a contract that says you direct a movie.
Now, did that movie do good?
I think it got, like, 48% in Rotten Tomatoes. It was, like, big on the... like indie scene, I guess, you know. I think it takes place in New York City. It's like a coming of age movie. 2008, he directs Long Shots with Ice Cube and Kiki Palmer, and it's about a Pop Warner football tournament or something. Yeah, that's really all I got for his like film stuff. Like, you have anything?
Yeah, other than that, that short film we tried to watch and couldn't get through, and he was the preacher. No, not really.
Yeah, I think he was on an episode of like Law and Order or something too.
Oh, I never seen
that. Something weird like that.
I knew he was in Zoolander.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah, when
just like points at Zoolander or something.
Yeah. In 2009, the band gets back together. They do a reunion tour. They release an album, Gold Cobra.
Yeah, it's like 2011. I think.
2011. So they do this reunion tour in 2009, and I guess they're kind of back in the scene or whatever. And due to the poor album sales, Jimmy Iovine has had enough and says, fuck you guys, you're off of this record label.
After Gold Cobra?
Yeah.
Like, what was selling then, though? Like, nothing was selling big enough that.
Yeah.
When was that? Oh,
2011.
So 2011. So they were on Interscope from 97 to 2011. That's a pretty damn good run, you know.
But it's only like 4 or 5 albums.
Yeah. Yeah, for 40 million albums sold and had only that many studio albums says something, you know. So then 2012, Limp Bizkit signs with Cash Money Records. Do you have any insight?
It was still around at that point, Cash Money.
Yeah, so Cash Money was like Juvenile.
Yeah, with Birdman and
Lil Wayne.
Yeah.
You know, they actually record a song with Lil Wayne.
Ready to Go or something. It's not
Ready to Go. Do you know it? I haven't
any. Yeah, anything that came out. I liked Gold Cobra, and everything on Gold Cobra I thought was musically was great, and the lyrics were garbage.
Right.
The music was amazing. Mm-hmm. And then the next album is Stampede and the Elephant Disco.
So, yeah, so they. It looks like they release an EP, Unquestionable Truth Part 2.
Oh, I never hear about that.
Yeah, so, and I guess it's supposed to be like a. Like a teaser for Stampede of the Disco Elephants, this album that still hasn't been put out. But the band leaves Cash Money in 2014.
All right, yeah.
So they're only
And is that when Lethal leave? When's Lethal leave?
So Lethal leaves around this time too.
Did it say why he left?
From what I read, he and Otto had drug problems in the band.
That's what I thought. Yeah.
And then something happened where Lethal left the band. But then he like did a public apology on Twitter, and the band took him back for a week, and they kicked him out.
Really?
Yeah. He left, and then he got back in. Fred, I like to think that Fred got him back in the band just so he could be like, "No, fuck you, you're fired." You know?
Maybe. Wait a week so he thinks he's good again, and then do it.
That's dick. That's not like Fred.
Yeah. How dare you, Fred? Come on now.
Satan wouldn't do that.
Yeah. Exactly. 2015, the band does Shiprocked. Did you see this thing?
This is what Wes said.
You
got kind of got...
So wait, I'll let you say it. For people that don't know, Shiprocked was a 4-day cruise featuring Chevelle, Black Label Society, POD, and Seven Dust. So you get to just be on this new metal cruise.
I would fucking definitely... Wow. Next time it comes around, who's with me?
I don't know. Is this ever going to come back around again, dude?
That ship sunk.
They're still out in sea.
They're lost at sea with the rest of the fucking new metal.
Can you imagine that? Say like that boat, literally like technology ended and just the captain died and you are on a boat with Limp Bizkit and like you all had to survive on an island and it's like lost, but it's all like these semi-famous new metal guys. You know how fucking useless they would all be at everything?
Fred Durst would have all the coconuts. He would be the guy that would figure it all out.
Somehow he'd make himself king and everyone would accept him as being their fucking king.
They would all be whining about fucking everything.
Dude, that's... Oh, my God.
He would be the most irritating guy, bitching the whole time, and he would have all the fucking shit. And everybody would be like, how did that happen? How did you get all this? How is he the king of this island? But yeah, so they do Shiprock
Island.
Also, that same year, Durst stated that he had interest in obtaining a Russian passport and spending half a year in Crimea, right? That's
Ukraine. That's like what Russia tried to take back over from the Ukraine.
Yeah. And he wrote a letter in which he stated that Vladimir Putin is a great guy with clear moral principles and a nice person.
Wow.
Wow. What is happening right now?
Yeah, Fred. Fred is like afraid to like piss people off, I guess. I don't.
What? That's all he did.
I know. It's because like. Okay, hold on. Wait. Before we go any further, I just got a couple quotes. Ready? We got Zach Wilde said of Limp Bizkit, Limp Bizkit can suck our big motherfucking fat cocks.
That guy's a loser.
Tim C, from the bass player from Rage Against the Machine, said somebody was interviewing him and was like...
Is this after he climbed the stage when they won Best Metal or whatever?
Sure.
Oh, God.
Oh, yeah, that because they lost Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, so he like rushed
the stage. Oh, God, yeah. So I guess this was right after this. They're like, hey, what was that all about? Like, I thought Fred said that you guys were a big influence of his and all this stuff. And he was just like, I do apologize for Limp Bizkit. Feels bad for inspiring the band. So he feels guilty. So the point I'm trying to make here is all these people talk shit about him.
But ahead and talk shit.
But Fred doesn't ever really respond. You know, like he doesn't really say anything back or make a big thing about it. He looks for like easy targets like Spice Girls and fucking shit like that.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
That's the way I look at it, at least. But so he doesn't get into Ukraine because he can't guarantee security for the country if he enters. I don't understand what that means.
He's going to cause riots there, too.
Yeah, probably. And then 2016 is the last thing I have on them. And You know, they haven't released this album. It's, I don't think it's still out at the time of this recording, right?
No, not out yet, I don't believe. No, yeah, no, still TBD on.
So yeah, it was like Fred was like saying like he wants to make the album sound like Paul's Boutique.
Wow.
And I think Wes was saying something like, oh, well, that's Fred. It's either never going to happen or it's going to happen or we'll find out soon, right?
So is he like the Axl Rose of the 2000s, I guess?
Oh, God, that's so depressing.
Yeah, I guess kind of. I mean, throwing a tantrum and not going on for an hour is kind of... But you know what? Listen, Limp Bizkit should be going on after Creed.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Especially at a concert that... Ozzy's gonna be at.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
So, I mean, I guess that kind of wraps up the timeline. I don't know if you guys have anything else about just historical about Limp Bizkit.
The only historical thing that I want to say about Limp Bizkit is I don't understand all the hate that they get from industry people. I get that guys like might not like the guy. Like, yeah, if you don't like Fred Durst, then fucking fuck Fred Durst. But like, the band was a big band.
The people like them. You know, yeah, it's like to be like, mad at Fred Durst.
The fucking goal is to sell albums. I understand on some level the people being mad they sold out. Like, all right, so Ryan was a fan of their rock shit, and then when they went over to rap, he's like, this sucks, I don't like it.
Right.
But like, yeah, the ego of the consumer to be angry that a band they like switches up their style. Like, how dare you fucking start rapping?
Right.
Fuck it, right? Whatever. The fans don't like it. Don't buy their shit. You could trash them all day. But where do all these other guys come off? Who the fuck is Zach Wilde? Like, what? Who the fuck are you? You're a fucking replacement for a fucking guitarist.
Randy Rhoads replacement.
You suck.
Oh yeah, Randy Rhoads. That's
your
guy. Yeah.
Your band blows. Like, fuck off. I just don't get it, man.
But yeah.
Hey, look, man. I'm a fan. So what are you gonna say?
Yeah, it's like Zach Wilde. Be mad at the fans of Limp Bizkit. Don't be mad at Fred Durst. Fred Durst isn't forcing people to buy his album, right? Like,
yeah, dude.
Or is he? Maybe.
But yeah.
He's using Satan mind powers to fucking take over the world.
That's the thing. I honestly implore you to find a band that's got as much hate for such a long time as Limp Bizkit.
Yeah, I mean... I don't know, Ryan, what do you think? Like, going in before the research? I know you knew a lot about the band beforehand.
Yeah, I don't know. The thing about me is it was so dark and ugly, that sound, when I first heard it.
Gotcha.
And it was just like, I felt like that. I was like, oh, yeah, I'm dark and ugly, too. And then right when I got to high school, that's when I needed them the most. Like, I need this, like, yeah, they're ugly and gross, just like me. And then they start, like, flip it. And
that's
now they're
fucking
all
deep,
playing
man.
For the people I feel ugly about. And you're like, no, you're doing the exact opposite.
Right.
You just made me fucking...
Like, they let you down.
You're fucking
me.
Oh, yeah, you like,
gotcha,
really
gotcha.
So you built me up, and I was a fan. And now you're just like, oh, no, I'm never going to do this. So just kind of like, oh, you're ugly, and no one likes you. And our music was ugly, and no one likes that.
And Ben Stiller.
Stiller I hated, too, at the time. So
I
was
just
adding on to each other. And now I'm listening to it, and we did all this research. And even $3 Bill, y'all, is fucking garbage. It's not good.
Yeah.
Their music's great, but the lyrics are the fucking dumbest, worst part of it.
Mm-hmm.
I was stupid for being, you know, in 7th, 8th grade and liking it, I guess. But
teenage angst
still
or whatever.
A fan.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm still a fan of it. It just sucks, and he sucks. But
it's more like nostalgia.
It's nostalgia, and it's such a part of my life, making Fred Durst jokes or just going into it. And
Gold Cobra, though, you like? Or?
Yeah. Musically, yeah. The raps.
I feel like if they did more instrumentals, I'd probably like them better.
Yeah.
Like, honestly, like, I try to listen to them myself.
But I wouldn't want them to have a different singer or something. And they need Fred Durst to be in it.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it's Limp Bizkit. He makes it.
Yeah.
No matter how bad he makes it or good, it is him doing it, I feel. And
he does have a unique sound.
It's
his
unique
voice.
As fuck. Yeah. No one sounds like him. And
yeah. I think I went into this, like, not liking Limp Bizkit and then walked out of this just kind of, like...
Hating him.
Like, it's like, I have respect for the persistence of Fred, and I do respect the hustle, but it's just like, why? Why are you the chosen one? Like, we were talking about Sublime. Bradley Knoll dies. He would have been the fucking biggest thing in the world, and everyone's confused, so they're just like, oh, well, that guy likes rap and rock, and let's do that now, you know? Like, that's what it just seems like, and it's kind of infuriating, but... who would play who in the movie? Who do you got?
Oof, I didn't even think yet.
Limp Bizkit movie. I don't know, James.
Well, we got George Costanza, so is playing Fred Durst, I feel.
George Costanza.
Jason Alexander.
Plays Fred Durst.
Gotta be.
Jonah Hill? That's not bad. I could see that.
I think West Borland would be Jim Carrey because he's
okay. I could see that. Yeah,
all his weird movements on stage, like, and is like spinning around and nonsense.
I think I could see Billy Zane playing Fred Durst in the movie, like a young Billy Zane.
He looks like a Billy Zane.
Yeah, right. That's the guy from the blue cigarette commercials. That, like,
no, that's Stephen Dorff.
Stephen Dorff could play fucking
Billy Zane's the bad guy from Titanic, and he's also in Zoolander.
He could play. Actually, he could play Fred Durst too. Billy Zane. Now I'm thinking about. But I was thinking of Stephen Dorff. as far as like Wes, I don't know who would play him. I guess
well, you can get a bunch of background actors to play the rest of the band because they are all fucking background actors.
Extras. Fucking Shia LaBeouf would be Wes Borland.
That'd be good.
I would.
Yeah, out of his fucking mind. Kind of
Stephen Dorff. And fucking him. Oh, that would be a good movie. I'd watch that shit. yeah, I mean, I guess that kind of really wraps it up, though. I don't know. I don't know anybody else in the band that I could say would play anybody.
True or false, they're big overseas still.
Yeah, overseas they sell arenas and shit in Europe and, Asia.
I feel like Europeans look at that. They still have CD players over there, right? I feel like I can see like Eastern European people being into them.
That's what I hear. What I do hear that.
Yeah, like Russians just like, yes, Limp Bizkit and Beastie Boy.
American badass.
But yeah, I mean, any last thoughts? Did we learn anything?
I just learned that, he's not great on the mic when it comes to not inducing riots. That's his main. He could work on that. Don't induce so many riots, and then I think it'd be good.
I think if we learned anything is you don't have to have talent to be famous. You just have to be hungry.
Persistent, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. You're hungry enough, you'll figure it out. But
I guess I learned that the fans suck. You gotta back up your fucking band.
Yeah, right. Stand by your bands. But all right, so thank you, James, for sitting in and,
I appreciate it.
And doing Limp Bizkit with us.
Yeah,
hell yeah! And thank you everybody for listening. You could get in touch with us through Twitter at Voluble Radio, and we'll see you next time. Thanks.
Salvation, my brothers, go get a gun, get the Bible. I love Jesus. Pollution.